One of the things I want to emphasize is that now resiliency is talked about a lot. But much of what's out there is just somebody's great idea, or what they think is a great idea about what resiliency is. This workbook and my work is based on social science research. It's entirely research-based. And I went into dozens, and by this time now, hundreds of studies on how people bounce back from every kind of adversity. And I synthesized it. And that is what is in my training, which some of you have had. And that is what is in the resiliency workbook. So before we dig in, I pose a challenge for you because so many of you are counselors. I've come to believe that fostering resiliency is fostering mental health, that they're very synonymous. So as we go through the workbook, see if you believe that as well. See if that resonates for you. So if everyone will pick up their book, and we're going to turn to table of contents, which is on Roman numeral 5. And I'm going to just do a quick outline, and then we're going to turn to some pages in the book. Resiliency happens in two ways. One is because environmental resiliency building factors, which are called protective factors, are strengthened in someone's life or in a family's life or in an organization's life. Another way resiliency happens is because individual qualities that research has identified help people bounce back, grow, get stronger. So there is an interplay between environmental resiliency builders and individual resiliency builders. And those factors in the academic literature are called protective factors. Many times you hear them referred to as resiliency building factors. They're one and the same. The latest research indicates that those same factors are what is called promotive factors, which means that they promote healthy human development. So if you look at your table of contents, you'll see that in chapter one, it's really focused on the idea that you were born resilient. We are resilient every single day. And it encourages people to think about the little ways that they've been resilient recently. So as everyone goes through their day, we have to deal with these tiny little minuscule challenges. Let's see, what are some of mine? Putting together a piece of furniture that came that needed to be assembled, losing my cell phone, can't find the car keys, didn't pick up an important phone call, and now I can't reach the people again, and on, this small stuff fills our day. And so the idea that we are born resilient is part of the attitude change that I want people to take away from the resiliency workbook. If you view every person, as well as yourself, with the lens of being resilient, it completely changes, in my experience, how you do your work. So then we go into the research-based plan for overcoming life's challenges. So it is an idea then really delineated in the book that this is based on research, as I've already indicated. And then I start talking about protective factors, personal resiliency builders in chapter 3. And in chapter 4, we look at the environmental resiliency builders. Chapter 5 introduces a wonderful concept that I didn't get in my social work training, in my master's program. I didn't find it until I found resiliency research, and that is the power of mirrors, that we have in our lives people and organizations that give us messages back to us. And one of the most important resiliency building things that can be done is to assess and look at what are the messages you're getting, or what are the messages that those you're working with are getting, and then change those. So as much as possible to put in positive, believing mirrors. And this is a good place for me to insert one of the other really important findings from the resiliency research, and that is the power of one person. Over and over and over again, studies indicate that, particularly at pivotal times in young people's lives, especially, one person, a teacher, a neighbor, a minister, a big brother, big sister, somebody at the youth center, one person, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a family member, can make an enormous difference in the trajectory of that person's life. And I emphasize this because so many of us in the helping professions, I think, get discouraged at times and think, what good is my little piece that I'm doing in this life that has so much adversity? And again, the resiliency research emphasizes that one person can make a huge amount of difference, particularly when they start to see themselves as agents of protective factors or resiliency building factors. So in chapter 6, I talk about the resiliency route to authentic self-esteem. And that is self-esteem that's based on actual reality of what's in someone's life. There's so many things that people have overcome, so many strengths they have that haven't yet been identified by themselves or by the people around them in many cases. And when those are identified, then that is authentic self-esteem. I have a chapter on intuition because that shows up a lot in resiliency and people's stories of how they were resilient, how they knew something they needed to do. And so I actually quote social science research on intuition as well. Chapter 8, Identify Your Achilles Heel, introduces a wonderful model. It's called the Stages of Change Model, and we'll look at it in just a moment, about how people actually can identify something that's holding them back and then make a positive change. How to keep going when the going gets tough is a summary. And then there is the resiliency quiz, which is a great resource that you can use with yourself, with those you're working with. I've had middle school teachers actually frame it a little bit, tease it a little bit, and use it with their students. So it can be used for adolescents, can be used people of all ages. And then glossary, index, etc. So let's just turn for just a moment to page 8. And I want to highlight the lens in which this book is written. At the bottom of page 8, you'll see damage versus challenge. And this is a quotation from Stephen Sybil Wolin. Dr. Wolin and Dr. Wolin, one is a psychiatrist, Steve, Sybil's a psychologist. What it wrote a pioneering book called The Resilient Self, in which they state, rather than framing the aftermath of trauma, tragedy, or crisis as damage, we can look at it as challenge, suggesting a needed shift from the damage model to the challenge model that recognizes each person has a capacity for self-repair. Each person has a capacity for self-repair, and that strength can emerge from adversity. So then, as you can see, I go on to talk about protective factors. And when I get through the overview of the book, we're actually going to do some of the activities here, because at the end of each chapter, the information taken from the resiliency research is put into a section I call Making It Real for You. And making it real for you are activities and questions that you can utilize in one-to-one, in groups, in classes, in community discussions that make the specific concept real for the people that are being trained or that are being taught about resiliency. On page 13, that's the chapter on protective factors. And I indicate that I'm amazed, this is the first paragraph, that is a term most people haven't heard of. After several decades of resiliency research, which emphasizes the power of protective factors, it's still not used in everyday conversation, and it should be. We still focus on everything that went wrong, all the negative things. But at the very same time, protective factors are operating, and those still too often go unacknowledged. On page 14, I discuss strengths from stress. And on page 15, there is a chart that you will come back and utilize in just a couple of minutes. The resiliency chart that you can use with yourself, with families, with individuals, even with an organization. And the resiliency chart is that simple assessment that takes into account not just the problem at hand, but also all the strengths that are operating at the same time as the problem is evident. On page 16 is the list of personal resiliency builders. Remember, I said that resiliency happens in two ways. One is because there's individual factors that the research has indicated are particularly powerful in helping somebody bounce back. Nobody has all of these, but everybody has at least one or two. And part of your work as an agent of protective factors is to help people identify specifically what they have from the research that's helping them bounce back. On page 18, I introduced the resiliency wheel, and that is the model of the environmental protective factors. These six conditions, again, according to so many research studies, help people bounce back despite whatever adversity they are dealing with. So one of the other amazing findings of resiliency research is that if you're dealing with pregnancy prevention, substance abuse prevention or intervention, school failure, any gang involvement, any of the myriad problems that come your way, these same six conditions have been shown across adversity and across age groups to help people bounce back. The most powerful is caring and support. Over and over and over again, caring and support in whatever form and as many forms as possible is the primary resiliency builder. And then beyond that, high expectations communicated that you believe in that person, that they can succeed, that they can overcome. Opportunities to contribute to life in meaningful ways. So much research about how that is beneficial, not just for people who are struggling, but for all of us. Positive bonds to positive people, places, activities. Very resiliency building, very protective against the negative bonds that happen when, for example, a middle school student goes behind the gym and starts smoking pot. That's a bond. What we want to do is invite and encourage and enable that young person to be positively connected. And again, that's protective against the negative influences. Boundaries are important. People feel more secure, feel more safe when they encounter boundaries. And life skills. Life skills are now translated often in social and emotional learning. And you may have heard that term. Life skills are dependent on the age of the individual and their circumstances. So you as the counselor have to assess. And the idea then is that you are agents of protective factors. And that's what this book allows you to do. So as you just thumb through, you will see all kinds of activities. Each one of these segments of the resiliency wheel explained in more detail, with the making it real activities at the end of each of the sections. On page 47, I talk about the concept of mirroring. And I've already mentioned that from the Wallens, particularly a wonderful quote there that according to child development experts, we are born without any idea of who we are. We piece together a picture of ourselves by seeing our reflection in the faces of the people who take care of us. And then children who get positive mirroring do better. And children who don't need repair, but the repair is possible. And we are agents of that. I want to flip over before I stop this introduction to a very important chapter, which is on page 64. And this chapter introduces the most powerful change model that I've ever encountered. This came from addictions research. Peroshka and DeClemente's six stages of change, and now it's used in every kind of behavior change. And the idea behind this particular model is that relapse is very typical when we're trying to make a change or assist others in making a change. So it shows the stages of change that these two researchers very specifically teased out from many, many, many years of research. When somebody is making a change, first they may be slightly thinking about it, then they think about it, then they determine to do it, then they take action, and then there's maintenance. But relapse is so typical, and then the stages just operate again. What this chapter includes that I think is really valuable is on page 67. What are the messages that you want to give depending on where you assess an individual is in the stages of change model? I just trained an agency in Milwaukee last week, and this agency is right on the streets with kids that are homeless, in trouble with the law, dropping out of school. And the director told me some of the workers were really getting discouraged because the change wasn't immediate and the change wasn't consistent. And I showed them the changes, stages of change model, and it was very affirming and very motivating. You just have to hang in there. So at the very end of the book, there is, let's see if I can get to this page, How to Keep Going When the Going Gets Tough on page 71. This is a roadmap, and it really is a summary of what the book has informed and inspired. And it's very important that you as counselors start with the resiliency attitude. That's that attitude that sees beyond the problems, that sees that innate self-righting and transcending ability, that capacity for self-repair. And then it talks about needing the strengths perspective, that is where you should be working. If the person is using it as self-help, they need to be using it as well for themselves. It talks about the resiliency wheel. Many people have to build the wheel into their own lives. And so this is a real message about the importance of doing that. And finally, there's the idea on page 73 of giving it time. Resiliency is a process over time. And I wrote about a young woman here that I met years ago that went through ninth grade four times. And she finally made it. And I asked her how she got through. And it was basically people didn't give up on her, but she didn't give up on herself. So that's an overview of the resiliency workbook. And I want to just close the overview by saying, I was at a conference, was in Philadelphia years ago, and at the end of my presentation, it was a workshop, a woman came up to me, and I had basically just communicated this information. This book is a compilation of the workshops I've given over many decades now, and the woman was in her 50s, and she was a helping professional, a counselor of some kind, and she looked at me and she said, "My whole life, I've defined myself by what's wrong with me. And now I'm going to define myself by what's right with me." And that really is your goal as helpers and counselors, to help people define themselves by their strengths, by what's right. Because when people bounce back, they bounce back because what is right in their lives within and in the environment gets stronger.